concept of applying marketing and the strategies and sciences and techniques of marketing to help strengthen and grow our affiliates, I was really eager and pleased to be able to say absolutely, because this is a real challenge that I know all of the affiliates have, and not just the agency as a whole. APHA actually has similar challenges. All organizations do, and that is, how do we really expand and grow our numbers? And it's more than just our numbers and recruitment and retention, all of that. That's part of it, but it's also the whole concept of thinking from a customer-centered perspective. And I know customer as a term in public health is still a little uneasy to some people, and I know the concept of marketing in public health is probably still a little uneasy to some folks, but if you think about both of these principles, it really there's a lot of ideas here and a lot of strategies here that could be really useful. I'm only going to be able to speak for a few minutes, unfortunately. I have to run to the convention center to give an award that's being given out right now, that's actually named for a late friend of mine. So I'm going to excuse myself right after my introductory remarks and turn it over to Steve, who is an expert marketer, actually much more expert than I am in this area, and he's going to lead you through the rest of the session with everything you would have known if you spent many years getting a degree in marketing somewhere, and how you can apply them to your affiliates and grow them. I'm going to just share a few comments up front here about health marketing, because I am from the center at CDC that's called the National Center for Health Marketing. And what health marketing is, it's defined up on the slide in front of you, and I won't read it to you, but if you read the definition, what you'll see is that it's focused on this idea of creating, communicating, and delivering value to customers. And that's a theme that Steve will come back to a lot. But this idea of who are the people you're trying to reach, and how are we going to offer them something that they perceive, that they find to be of value to them. And that's going to be, again, a theme you'll hear a lot about. It's also about managing customer relationships and how we manage those relationships in a proactive, forward-looking way based on what customers want and need is the key to effective marketing. Our center at CDC, we don't really technically market CDC. We market health. So our function, our reason for existing, is the idea of improving and protecting people's health. It's public health work. So we use marketing techniques and strategies to protect and promote health. The model you see up here is a very... Anybody in here ever study marketing? Okay, quite a few of you. So forgive some of the simplicity of this part and some of the details Steve will go over, but marketing is about product and customers. In public health, when we think about marketing, whether it's an affiliate trying to expand your membership, or whether it's someone in smoking and tobacco cessation trying to get people to quit, we often make the mistake of starting from our products and saying, well, we have this great product, why aren't people just going to start using it? And let's just shove it, let's print up brochures or put some commercials on TV, or if you're an affiliate, let's set up a booth at an exhibit somewhere, and people will just walk by and hear about how wonderful it is and join. And it doesn't work that way, unfortunately. The key to effective marketing actually is in the top of this model. It's the arrows that point inward. And it's the data you collect from your customers, whether it's ultimately the public or health professionals or whomever your customers may be. It's understanding information from them, researching them, talking to them, listening to them. Those are the keys to effective marketing. And once you can do that well, and once you analyze your customers, then the strategies on the bottom, the efforts we use to market information back, will be much more effective. And again, at CDC and our health marketing work, this is how we see what we do at an agency level, is we analyze and study the different customers and audiences we're trying to reach to promote and protect their health. We use the data we collect from them to inform our products and how we position our products and promote them and market them. And then we do outward-facing efforts to actually increase uptake of whatever it is we're marketing. So this is my early introduction. I think what you'll learn for the next hour or so, in a interactive way, I'm sure, will be techniques that you can and should apply to your affiliates, and how you can grow them, how you can better understand and analyze your customers, and use that information to grow from there. And it also involves trade-offs and choices and prioritization, and you'll learn a lot about that. But I also want my little plug and seed that I want to plant with you is that this concept is very practical and tangible for our affiliates and for the work we do. But it also, and I feel strongly about this, is going to be really important to the future of public health and the work we do as health professionals, and that these strategies and techniques of marketing and communication and customer centricity can, in fact, should, in fact, become more part and parcel to how we do effective public health work. So keep that in the back of your mind while you're wearing your affiliate leadership hat and how these lessons can apply to there. Are there any questions or comments for me, unfortunately, before I have to step out? If not, Steve will give you our contact information at the end of this, and we would be delighted to stay in touch with you and help you both through the COA and through other channels as well as to affiliates directly. I also offer up to you one last thought, is that our whole work in communication and marketing, one of our top strategic priorities actually in our strategic plan is to engage more closely with the states, with state and local public health. And we think that the work we're doing in health marketing is something that really could be beneficial to state and local public health. And we have a lot we could learn from you as well, of course. And so if you want to engage with us, not only on marketing techniques for your organization, but also ways that we might more closely collaborate, you know, in our day jobs as health professionals, please feel free to contact us about that as well. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Steve Luce.
Great. Thank you, Jay. All right. So as we mentioned a couple of times now, we have a pretty good turnout, so I really appreciate all of you coming here. But I would like to keep this or have this be a bit interactive, and I will try to make it controlled or in a controlled way. I have slides and I have talking points to keep me in line, but I don't want to necessarily drone on for an hour about marketing theory and marketing principles and leave you to figure out how you can match those two together once you leave this room. So I would really encourage you as questions come up or ideas that you might want to just shoot out in terms of maybe something you're struggling with at your organization or so forth, feel free to raise your hand and let's discuss it. And you know, maybe if it's a question that may be addressed later on in the presentation, I'll certainly let you know. We don't have a microphone back here, but it's a small enough room, so I would just ask too as well, when you ask a question, just make sure you project your voice if you can, and maybe also just state your name and where you're from too, just so I can at least get a feel, and maybe some of your colleagues can get a feel as well. So I'm here today to talk about customer-centered marketing framework. And hopefully what you'll learn here will reinforce and validate some things you already know, and you'll learn some new things to take back to your organizations to help address some of the issues you have out there at your organizational level. As you probably saw from the bio, I'm a marketing guy. I'm very new to public health, and I've had a great year and a half here. And just because I'm on the novice side of public health knowledge, if you will, doesn't necessarily mean that I don't know how to help you market your organizations. The marketing framework, the customer-centered marketing framework, is pretty consistent across whatever industry or whatever world you live in or industry you work with. So a lot of what I'm going to show you today can not only apply to your organization, but can be applied to other areas as well. So I want to talk about a little bit about the real high level, the four kind of areas, if you will, of market management. And a lot of this stuff, for especially people with marketing backgrounds, you probably know this and might seem somewhat elementary, but I think it's important to go through. Market analysis, marketing planning, marketing implementation, marketing control. All four of these phases are very important to do well in a true customer-centered marketing environment. There's a lot of organizations out there that do some of these well or most of these well, but may not do one thing well. And I will tell you that based on my experiences and friends I have and colleagues in the marketing world, if you don't do one of these things well, chances are you're not going to find the success you're looking for. It's really important to really look at these and do them all well. And I'm going to focus most of my talk and discussion today on the first two points, marketing analysis and marketing planning. But we will talk about the other two points briefly near the end. So the first phase is market analysis. And a lot of you are probably going to know what this is because you do it well in the public health area. And that is, it's where you collect and analyze data. And it's to create information that will help you inform the activities you want to do in your organization. Even though this is kind of a marketing-specific activity, it's also really a business activity. You may not have a marketing department. You may not care about marketing. But chances are, if you have an organization and you need to know what your organization's about, you've conducted some sort of analysis at some point. But it's important to mention this. And the tools that generally you'd probably use and probably have experienced at some point in time is sort of a situational analysis, looking out there in the environment, not only in public health, but outside of public health. What's going on in the world? How does that impact your industry or your field or your discipline? How it impacts your organization? and also doing a SWOT, which, you know, this is pretty textbook stuff, but, you know, SWOT is your strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and strengths. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the SWOT. I'll spend a little bit of time on the situational analysis piece. But, you know, SWOTs have there's different ways of doing these SWOT analysis, but generally your strengths and your weaknesses are things you need to look at inside your organization. You need to understand what your strengths and weaknesses are. The opportunities and threats, a lot of people will look at those inside their organization as well, but opportunities and threats are more external. Those are things that are going to help guide your direction moving forward. So just a few things with situational analysis. There's a lot of different ways to go about doing that. It really falls into two different buckets. There's kind of a macro look and a micro look. So those of you with the marketing backgrounds and those with the economic backgrounds will probably know these terms very, very well. But it's important to do both. And from the macro environmental perspective, there's a lot of different ways you can look at it. There's what I've used a lot too, and it works easy because it's a nice memorable acronym is the PEST theory, which it can be a pest for some people who don't want to do it, but it's important to look at, you know, some of the different factors out there. So it's your political, your economic, your social, your technology aspect. I mean, political, for all the work you do here, it makes a lot of sense. You know, what's going on in the government that will impact your business and how you and how your members or your prospective members work in the field of public health. It also translates to policy as well. Economic, you know, is there anything going on economic side which could, you know, dictate how things are? I mean, people's spending ability may have a lot to do with if someone can afford, you know, a membership fee or an annual due once a year. I mean, these are things that you may not think always impact your organization, but chances are if you really think hard on it, they will. Social, this is actually a really big one, I think. I think when you look at in terms of how there's a movement towards sort of social networking, especially with your younger audiences, with people that, you know, communicate more through Facebook and MySpace and email and instant messaging and LinkedIn. And then you might have more of an older demographic, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but more of a traditional demographic, if you will, that still base their communications on phone and meeting people like they do at APHA. These are things you need to consider when you want to reach out or understand your customers. Look at those kind of tools out there. How do people interact socially? And then technology, too. Technology moves at the speed of light, and it still does, and it's amazing to think where we'll be in 10 years from now. But again, you know, look at the website, internet, you know, having an internet is kind of old news. I mean, we all should have had an internet 5-6 years ago, or a website 5 or 6 years ago. People today, when they go to your internet sites or websites, they choose to find things that are more interactive and content-driven and things that are specific to them, and they want, you know, portals with information that really caters to them. And a lot of you probably had experiences. I mean, if you're flying Delta like a lot of us who in Atlanta do, you know, you can log into your Delta SkyMiles account, and you have your itineraries in there, and you have a lot of things that are personalized to you. People out there demand this kind of information. So when you're looking at, you know, how to make your members happy or how to recruit new ones, these are the kind of things you need to think about. And then we have geographic and natural, too. There's a couple other things. I mean, geography plays a big role, not only where you are in the country, but where you are in the state that you represent. Are they in a rural environment? Are they in a city environment? Those things make an impact. And natural as well. And the big topic with anything of a natural sort of factor right now is climate change. You saw that in the keynote yesterday. Climate change is a huge issue. It's going to have a huge issue in the public health industry as well. So though, you know, that's something to keep in the back of your mind when you're thinking about how to create value with your members. And I'm rambling on, but if you have questions, please raise your hand. I don't like to drone. I'm not going to spend much time on going through every one of these things. I think a lot of these are pretty straightforward. But when you get to the micro-environmental, this is kind of like, okay, before we talked about the big picture, the world out there, what's going on, now the micro-environment is looking at, okay, a little bit more closer to your organization. You know, maybe things are going on in public health. Things are going inside your organization, or maybe in a larger scale, say the APHA and the National Association. I didn't rank these in any sense of priority, but the two big ones there are going to be the Cs, the customers, and your competitors. We're going to talk a lot about the customer aspect today. We're not going to talk a lot about the competitive aspect today, but I will tell you that just because everyone is a partner in public health and they work well together and you don't sometimes think you have, that's at least the impression I've gotten when I started getting into public health was, well, we don't really have competitors out there. You probably do. You probably do if you really think about it. If you think about it in the terms of, okay, you know, if you have members that aren't as active with you or let memberships lapse, you know, why are they doing that? Are they putting money somewhere else? Is their job a competitive aspect? Maybe they work 80 hours a week and they're traveling too much and have no time to give to your organization. I mean, there's different ways of thinking of a competitive environment. It's not just Burger King versus McDonald's. There's a lot of different ways to look at it. The second phase of kind of that four-piece market management process is the market strategy, and we're going to spend most of the presentation here on these four areas, and it's segmentation, target marketing, positioning, and the marketing mix. And the marketing mix are also known as the P's, which a lot of you have probably heard at some point in time. I think it's important to stress that a lot of what we're going to go through here is actually what you go through if you're developing a marketing plan. Anybody's ever been involved in development of a marketing plan? A marketing plan is not just a piece of paper that says what kind of, like Jay kind of mentioned before, it's not about your brochures and your websites and just some of the more cursory type of marketing activities. A marketing plan is really getting into the strategy and getting into the thought of how you practice good customer-centered marketing. So let's get into segmentation, and I think people with the marketing backgrounds and people with the public health backgrounds probably should know this fairly well, but I think you might find it interesting that, you know, a lot of what we do with segmentation you'll be able to apply to your organization as well. And I have a definition up there for you to all read. You can segment in a lot of different ways, and the first thing that comes to mind with a lot of people is sort of the demographic segmentation. So it's your traditional, you know, age, gender, racial background, that sort of thing. But there are also other ways to segment. It's geographic. It's where you live. It's psychographic. It's like what social class are you members in? You know, lifestyle. You know, what are their personality traits? Do you have members that, you know, are more leadership types? Some of that are more passive types. Compulsive, ambitious. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to segment. It's a little harder to track and put on a piece of paper, but, you know, if you think hard about your membership, you may find that, you know, gosh, you know, some of these folks kind of fit into different categories. You know, you have the people that are more passive and they're comfortable being just sitting back and, giving their contribution, but they don't speak up very much or they don't want to take lead roles. That's fine. You know, those members are probably just as important as the other ones, but you have to understand that they're different people and they probably have different needs. Already kind of giving myself a segue to the next slide, but these are really why you want to segment. So segments have different needs. They also have different levels of responsiveness. It's not just about the needs and wants of a particular segment, young, old, whatever, but they all have a different way to respond to what your organization has to offer. They're all looking for different things. You know, you may have members that aren't that busy, and you might have ones that are really busy. There'll be a different level of responsiveness there. And then from the internal perspective, this last bullet is probably important. Other than, you know, some of the money from the Kellogg side, and I don't know how that's all working out, but I will tell you that I know a lot of folks in public health don't have a lot of money to spend. They don't have a lot of resources on the human capacity side either. Segmentation is a great way to make sound decisions on where you want to spend limited marketing dollars. Don't go and chase. There might be a segment out there. You might be like, there's a certain group of people that I want to go out and I need to have them in as part of my membership community. But you also realize that the ability to do that may not be that great for whatever reason. There might be roadblocks or other uncontrollable factors. You might be better off taking that limited funding and limited human capacity and putting it towards segments that may not seem as attractive on the outside, but you have a little better success rate in bringing them on. It's all about your own goals as an organization, but segmentation is not only about, you know, looking to see what's out there, but it helps you internally make a good decision on where you want to pursue. Yeah, there's a lot of data out there, and I would say that there's a lot of marketing tools that you can go out and get online. Even you can go through public consumer survey type of things. I'm trying to think of some off the top of my head that I haven't used so many in public health here. I think a lot of the resources that you all have in the public health side, you could probably take and pull data. So if you're say working in a public health program, for example, wherever you're pulling that data from, chances are there's probably information there that you can draw from to develop some of the marketing side. But there's, like, you know, satisfaction indexes out there. I mean, and I can send you some information because I have a lot of hyperlinks or web links on this, but even if you just go to Google and Google survey or customer satisfaction or market segmentation, there's a lot out there. The only problem is you're going to find, and this kind of comes with the resource issues, and this is where everybody has to work together. I know this was mentioned in the keynote yesterday about everybody sharing information in a public health setting, but marketing research data is not cheap. There's a lot of information out there that's free, but it's usually kind of your more basic information, you know, trends, you know, how some markets grow more than others, and you know, just some basic stuff. But if you want to get to the real detail of how people think, that's going to cost you some money. Now, in your membership community, which is probably a little smaller focus, surveys are a great way. I think, you know, even just market research does not have to be always quantitative. It can be qualitative as well, too. So if you have an annual meeting, or if you even here, if you have certain people that are here, a certain membership group here, you can talk with. I mean, just face-to-face, sitting down. You can sit down. You can make it a formal structure. You can make it a discussion group or a focus group. But just talking, someone in the elevator. I mean, those are little things you can take back with you. But and it's hard to say that because I know we're all about science and public health, especially at CDC, and I face this a lot whenever I'm talking about qualitative versus quantitative. But qualitative is a lot easier to get. And it gives you a direction of where you want to go. And that's not a bad thing. It's better than not going anywhere. Yes?
Yeah, back on your prior slide relative to supplements. I was surprised that at least you didn't use the term diversity in terms of looking at segments. And, you know, particularly in affiliates, membership issues, it really cuts both ways across the country in terms of conservative. I just had a member. Mm-hmm.
I think diversity, if I go back to some of them, I'm actually going to go on another slide as well, too. I think diversity is kind of cross-cutting. I think you can really look at a lot of different sort of segment factors or segment criteria, and you could apply diversity in some shape or form, both from demographic, but I think you're getting more toward the attitude side of things and the behavioral side of things, and that's always a consideration. I mean, us at the agency, not even so much our center, but at CDC, they're tackling that issue as well. There's a lot of things that we do that aren't even marketing related that have an impact on diversity. It's probably worth to sit down. If you're going to have an exercise with people in your organization to go through a process like this with market segmentation, you should sit down and just write out on a whiteboard or a piece of paper what are some of the important criteria that you want to. It's a mindset, really. You know, so diversity is a key piece. So you want to make sure you think of diversity in everything you do. I mean, there should be some underlying themes, basically. But I didn't neglect the, you know, diversity for any reason, but this is more just this is real 50,000-foot level type stuff. And so benefits of segmentation. So, and I think I kind of hit on this a little bit already, but, you know, it's not only the needs of people, but then when you get to the communication side of things, I mean, however you segment. So, you know, again, I don't have any concrete examples because you can segment any way that makes sense to your organization. But most likely, however you segment, those folks are going to probably respond to your way of communicating and bringing them in and showing value. It could be the language you use and how you put together promotional material. It could be how you say things. It could be the tone. It could be just what you say, what's of a benefit to them, what's of value to them. One size does not fit all. I mean, very few companies now practice that approach anymore. I mean, people automatically think of like the big companies, like the Walmarts of the world and the big companies out there, but they practice segmentation every day. I mean, you get some national advertising, they're speaking to everything, but you know, they also selectively choose newspapers to put advertisements in and TV ads and signage in their Walmart location. It's not the same across the country. Excuse me. So it's very important to understand how you're going to create that message and have it resonate with your audience. I've kind of touched on these already, but again, I think the last bullet is more internal, but important to remember. Again, segmentation is going to help you really focus where your resources are. So I kind of put this here, you know, based on some of the knowledge I had coming into this presentation with a lot of the affiliates. when I ask people what their audience is, and a lot of the answers I get are public health professionals. And yeah, that's a smaller slice of the world population, but this is not segmented. This is not segmented. And again, kind of going back to some of those factors, but I just threw a couple quick examples here. You know, again, demographic. I mean, I would take a wild guess that say that a lot of your younger audiences and your older audiences and your membership community probably have some different needs in different ways they want to work with you. I think what they do in public health, are they in the field? Are they the ones that are the first line of care or communication? Are they educators? Are they EPIs? Are they in policy? Are they in leadership position? Those are all things you need to consider. And then just getting down the line, I mentioned these already before. And again, this is information that I can share with you after this presentation. I'm going to send this presentation out to you all, by the way, as well. But there's certainly a sort of a standard checklist of things you can consider when you look at how to segment. But you can really segment in any way you see fit. I mean, you can take a very big picture approach and say, okay, here's this whole, you know, how do I split this up? You know, what's important to me or what's important to my members as an organization? So target marketing is kind of the next step in the market sort of strategy piece that I've talked about. And target marketing is basically the evaluation aspect. So market segmentation is more, okay, I'm going out there, I'm seeing what kind of different folks I have out there, what kind of different potential memberships or prospective members do I have out there. Now I got to make a decision on who do I pursue. Because chances are, as I mentioned a little bit before, you can't pursue everyone. You can't, you'd like to. And so, I mean, that's a public health, I know, conundrum is, we want to, you know, go out there and make everybody healthy, make everybody better. But we all know that it's impossible to do that all at once. We have to sort of pick our areas. And I think the same way can be applied to marketing and your affiliates as well. There's four market strategies that I'm not sure how much they really apply to the organization, but I've talked a lot about segmented marketing, which we're talking about here. I think it's important that if you ever hear marketers talk, there's also other market strategies besides segmented marketing and the mass marketing approach I mentioned before, which you don't really see very often anymore. People who maybe sell commodities or who sell things just based on price might tend to do this. Niche marketing is more of selling a particular product to a particular audience. Segmented. The difference between segmented and niche marketing is segmented. You may sell different variations of services to a particular audience or audiences. Niche marketing is usually that an organization has one thing to offer and they have one segment out there to give it to. That's niche marketing. And the micro-marketing is kind of it's not so much a new strategy, but it's become a little bit more evolved in the last decade or so, especially with the ability of electronic commerce. But micro-marketing is also called one-on-one marketing. So, you know, the best example that comes to mind, and I'm not a mother, as you can probably tell, but, the baby industry in terms of baby products and so forth has a lot of this. A lot of moms who said, wouldn't it be great if I had something that I could, I can't remember the name of the thing now, but it's popped in my head, but the sort of the baby harness, it sort of goes over your shoulder. I can't think of the name of it, but, that I remember that story. That was a mother who was just not comfortable with the options available to her. So she developed this one product for one particular narrow market. It was a mother who, you know, was mobile. And you could kind of make an example of that in micro-marketing. So does that opportunity exist in inside your association? Probably not, but you never know. You may have one particular thing that you want to offer just one particular group of people that you think may add value to them. It's worth considering. Everything I'm talking about today is very important, but I will tell you that the one thing that I think, if I had to say one absolute thing is the most important thing to do for an organization and a marketing side and probably even a business side, it's positioning. How you position yourself as an organization, how you position your services or your product or your brand, whatever you want to call it, they're generally interchangeable terms, how you position it relative to the competitive offerings or alternative solutions that your members or prospective members could do. If they look at you and they see something that you have to offer, is it something that you do differently or better than anybody else? Many companies, they've done case studies on this and a lot of marketing trade journals. A lot of successful companies or that were successful really lost track of this point. Their positioning became more, oh, we're the leader in this, or we're the first to market in this, or we do this. But nowadays with consumers, and I say consumers, that's a very kind of end-user term, but your members are consumers as well. They're consuming information and product that you all have. if you don't differentiate, if you don't provide some value to someone, then real or perceived, then chances are you're going to have a little difficult time bringing in or reaching the membership goals you want to. Real and perceived, I should have put these in all caps. I mean, Microsoft is a great example for a while. I mean, Microsoft, for years and years and years, never had the best product out there. I mean, you talk to anybody who knew computers and technology. Microsoft had, you know, was always behind Apple, was behind other companies out there in terms of their product. But gosh, they were great with marketing, and they had the dollars to spend. They became a market leader without being the best product. So the perception was Microsoft was the best product. The reality was they weren't the best product. And I'm saying this based on a lot of things that, you know, case studies done at Microsoft. Now they might have the best product out there, which is good for them. But it's important to remember that just because you internally think that you have something that's better than anybody else to offer, what is the perception out there? If the perception is that you don't, then you don't. I mean, that's a cold, hard reality of positioning. So differentiation aspect's important, and where that kind of translates into is your unique value proposition. And this goes by a lot of different monikers. It's your elevator pitch or your elevator statement or your unique selling proposition. They're generally all pretty much interchangeable terms. They mean the same thing. How are you going to differentiate? And the approach to do that is kind of my notes here. I'm going off the top of my head. This is pretty good. The approach to doing this is you got to look at your advantages. You know, what are things you do well? What do you think you have an advantage for? Choose the right advantages. And the basic criteria there, is there something, again, that you do that no one else does? What's that compelling reason for people to do business with you or to work with you and pay their dues and be active members? Consider that. You know, the positioning strategies on here, you know, again, you guys know your business better than I do, but, you know, you can also look at repositioning the competition as we speak. So if your members or prospective members are doing other things that take them away from your group, you know, maybe you can position yourself in terms of we do this better, or as they say, reposition the competition. So I think Wendy's is a great example with this. You know, their campaign right now is sort of the fresh, you know, hamburger, never frozen. You know, Burger King kind of did that a while ago, flame broiled. But, you know, I think if I remember the story correctly, but Burger King, you know, they had like the best tasting burger, and Wendy's said, well, we think we have the best tasting burger. We're just going to simply say that ours is fresh, because Burger King never said that, you know. And all of a sudden, Wendy's is seeing an uptick in their burger sales. So they almost repositioned Burger King in a way. Burger King had, you know, great tasting hamburgers, but all of a sudden now Burger King, even though they don't say it in their advertising, Burger King now has frozen hamburgers that are flame broiled, simply by Wendy's saying we have fresh hamburgers. So that's kind of an example of repositioning the competition. So again, does it apply to your organization? I don't know. You know, I would love to know more about each of your issues, and I'm going to offer certainly my time, because I don't have a lot of it, but certainly offer my help with anything that you all have in terms of a particular challenge. But I really do want to know more about how you all operate and some of the challenges that you face. So once you get your position, then there's actually a position statement. And I don't know how many of you are always told this about, you know, I have a to-do list today. Well, you just got to write it down. Or, you know, I have a plan. I have a goal to lose 10 pounds or to eat healthier. And everyone says, oh, write it down. And chances are you probably never write it down unless you're just a listaholic and you love lists. Positioning is the same way. Once you figure out what you want to do, write it down. Positioning statement. This will almost be, and you've probably seen this maybe walking into like doctor's offices or other retail outlets as well. Sometimes you'll see organizations put their positioning statement on the wall or it's in their materials. This is really the foundation for everything you're going to say about what you do. It should be weaved into all of your marketing materials. It should be weaved in things you say in your conversations with people out in public health. If you go talk to someone over at the exhibit floor at APHA across the road, you know, if there's certain things that you have in your position statement, those should all be mentioned in your conversation. You probably don't have to read it in verbatim because you might sound a little odd, but it should be weaved. You don't want to stray from it. Successful large organizations, when they come up with positioning statements, they do huge internal marketing campaigns, internal to employees, to make sure everyone knows this. And they make, you know, they put them in every form of documentation and email signature blocks. I mean, they reinforce that constantly because you want to speak a consistent voice and you want to speak about what your benefits are. Definitely, to your segment. It's a great question. Yeah, based on your segment. So, again, each segment may have a little something different that you want to bring to the table or show value to them. So you, that's a good point. You would want the positioning statement to be based on your segments. So, you know, like, this doesn't apply to you, but larger companies that are public, that have shareholders, you know, they generally have a statement that is kind of all-encompassing, because people being in the national spotlight, having shareholders from everywhere, they have to be able to say something about their company. But chances are, when you start to drill down, if they're practicing good customer-centered marketing, they're going to have a position statement based on each of their market segments. And this is an example. I mean, this could be a template, certainly. I think I actually pulled this from the American Marketing Association. But, you know, it just basically, you want to, in your position statement, say, who is, what's the value, why is it different, who's it going to? All right. Oh, I just went too fast. I was going to quiz you guys in the piece. One thing I don't like to do with my slides is, you know how you see this, the slide builds? Almost every single time you see someone who forgets to hit the button and something doesn't build. So I don't put builds into my slides at all. So anyway, but I was going to quiz you all, but this is an easy question because it's all in your abstract. But you've probably heard about the marketing piece. It's also called the marketing mix. Product, price, promotion, place. There's going to be a bonus question, though. There's actually three other P's out there now that's not in your abstract, so you can't look for it. But there are some new P's that people do consider when considering the marketing mix. Actually, let me ask a question. Does anybody know what those other three P's are? Want to take a shot? I'm sorry? No, that could be one in public health. People. There's one. Packaging is one. And partners. Partners can be applied everywhere. I like the policy idea, though, too. I've actually thought about the policy piece a little bit. Not ready to sort of introduce that into my whole spiel yet, but probably because I don't want to age faster. But these are three other P's now. It's kind of like anybody in academic. You know, there's always sort of this disputing theories about what's a certain framework. And you talk to marketers, and there's some traditional marketers that say, oh, there's only four P's and no more than four P's. I'm a little more progressive. I'll say there's seven. There's also people who think a marketing mix is very tactical. It means go out there and do the activity, do the program, do your campaign, you know, go recruit members, do this and do that. I'm a big believer, as I think others that I know in the marketing world, that it is more of your strategic mindset. These are things that you really need to think about in a strategic way before you start saying, okay, these are my action steps or these are my tasks. You know, what kind of people do we want? What kind of partners do we want to engage with to accomplish our goals? And again, everything I'm saying here now translates back to what I was saying earlier about market segmentation. So everything I'm going to talk about with the marketing mix applies to that segment or those segments that you have within, that you've identified, hopefully, at your organization. Any questions so far? Okay. So we're going to go through the P's. We're in the home stretch already, just so you know. But we'll hopefully have more questions as we go along. A product can be something certainly tangible. It can be a car. It could be a toothpaste. It can be a chair. It could be anything. But a product can also be a service. It can be anything that someone accesses and utilizes. So it doesn't have to be necessarily tangible, but it can be anything that someone uses. So a health intervention in our world, and that's inside public health, or at least CDC, a health intervention is a product. A service is a product. I mean, there's variations of that. I mean, there's more distilled definitions of what a service is, but generally it's a product. So they're not that separate. So when you hear service, it's a product. You can have different levels of products as well. You can have the same product that has different variations. And the best example that comes to me was the American Express. They do a really good job. And I almost maybe saw some parallels without really knowing your organization very well, which is not practicing good customer-centered marketing strategies, American Express. You know, memberships. They have different levels of memberships based on different needs. Anybody who in Atlanta who flies Delta, who travels a lot, probably likes the Delta SkyMiles program. SkyMiles is a great way to earn miles and so forth. So they have a traveler. So their market segment that is aimed at the busy traveler, they have a SkyMiles program. For the people who like to spend over $250,000 a year, probably not anybody in this room, they have American Express Black. And they have other different levels of memberships. So when you think of product, there can be different variations of product. So I kind of keep it out there. So when you think of a strategy of memberships, you might already have this, or you might want more or less, but you can offer, let's say, a membership opportunity is your product, you can offer different levels or variations of that, again, based on what your market segment wants. So price. And price is very simply, for a lot of people, it's the cost to obtain the product, and people automatically think dollars and cents, anything monetary. Well, there's also a non-monetary aspect to this. It's people's time, it's social pressure. So for example, you know, if there is something that, I guess I go on personal experiences, and anybody in Atlanta knows this as well, airline travel. Southwest is a great airline to travel from a discount perspective, but anybody in Atlanta knows Southwest does not fly out of Atlanta. I have to drive to Birmingham to get to Southwest. So that is actually a consideration of price. Southwest may have a fare that's $200 less to get me to where I want to go, but do I want to get in the car and drive 2 hours to Birmingham, park my car, fly back to Birmingham, pay the parking, and then drive back home? Personally, no. But, you know, those are things to consider. So there are non-monetary aspects of price. Social pressure. A great example here, and I will already say I apologize to anybody who is either from Hawaii or likes a particular Hawaiian dish, but Spam. All right. Everyone makes jokes about Spam, right? It's huge in Hawaii, but generally speaking, Spam is not as popular in the continental United States. People might like Spam, you know, Spam and egg, or I don't know what kind of dishes you have out there. But there's a social pressure aspect to it. Someone might go out and buy Spam, but they might not tell their friends about it. All right? That's actually a price. That's actually an example of price. I mean, that is an example of, you know, okay, it's not monetary, but how I would be looked upon if my best friend knew I ate Spam. You know, you might not like that. You might even stop eating it just for the fear of being found out. I mean, but it's an example of it. So I put some kind of equational things here, but I mean, price, again, it's really a cost in exchange for a benefit. You're paying something, either money or your time or something non-monetary, in exchange for a benefit received. It translates to value. Again, you have to go back to value. What value are you providing your membership or your market segment? You'll notice, too, in the last question here, they're more reinforced. I'm not really saying them, but I'm finishing every slide asking you, in a way, how does your product support your positioning? So when you leave here and you go back and think about how your membership operates today and how you're positioned, you start thinking about these products and prices and all these other P's, does it support your position? It all has to go back to that.
So is
service also a product? It is in a very general sense. I mean, service, you can define service academically and theoretically, you can define service a little bit different in terms of it might not be as tangible, but for purposes of the sort of framework, service is a product. So promotion. This is the most misunderstood P. Promotion, most people think of marketing as promotion. They also think of promotion as selling, therefore they think marketing is selling. And they're very two different but related things. And I can tell you firsthand, I've had experiences inside the agency even, is there are a lot of folks on the scientific side and some on just the public health side of things, advisor side, that think marketing is still nothing but selling. Why is CDC selling? National Center for Health Marketing, why are we selling? Marketing is not selling, but they do work very closely with each other, and usually one is not effective without the other. Promotion is not just about going out there and handing out, you know, cards or flyers or this and that, but promotion is anything about communication. So it's actually probably one of the P's that you'll spend the most time and money on. But promotion as a marketing P encompasses everything you do with how you communicate with your audience, how you communicate your unique selling or value proposition, and just some ideas of what those promotional components are. And there's a whole list. I actually went back to an old textbook. And there's like another 20, 25 things you could probably say. But anything you do, any vehicle, any touch point you have with a potential member or a member is kind of considered a promotional component or a promotional aspect. I think identity management is one thing, too. The last bullet, it's more like your corporate identity. That's like your visual. That's like your, you know, how you represent yourself visually. Your logo, your colors, those are actually important things to consider. They should convey your positioning. They should convey the personality of your organization. Great example is Atlanta-based Coca-Cola. And I keep apologizing for the Atlanta references, but it's where I live. Coca-Cola uses red, and you know that's been around for a long time, but a lot of people wanted to copy that red because for years and years and years, studies always shown that red was the color that denoted action and excitement, and people... they actually did tests where they, you know, put Coca-Cola in different color cans, and people always went to the red can. I mean, so those are kind of things to think about. you could also spend a lot of money trying to figure that out, which I'm sure you won't. So sometimes it's your best guess or having that qualitative discussion I was mentioning before. All right, so place. Place is really anything that is an ability to get your product out there. So it could be your website. It could be you might have a trade show booth here. It could be you might have a partner that actually gets your product out or gets your information out. Any way to get your product into the hands of your consumer is considered place. It can be direct. You know, this is not a public health example, but Walmart, again, I'll use that as an example. Walmart is gets product in the hands of customers, but they don't make the product. So that's part of more of a distribution strategy and a marketing channel. We won't go into that, could be a whole different topic of conversation, but just think of place again as a way to get that product into the hands of who's going to consume it, the product that is. So people, there's a lot of people are so important to your organization, and that's probably an obvious statement, but there are a lot of examples out there of organizations that have a positioning strategy. They could be warm and friendly and this and that, but then when you call up and you have that, you know, customer service experience where the person is just brutal to you, they just completely destroyed their brand with one bad phone call experience that you had. In the marketing world, and I will tell you that in a lot of organizations, especially in the private sector, there is more of a push to actually have human resources fall within or under the marketing piece, only because you want to have some sort of control of the people you bring on. They reflect who you are. They reflect your brand. And I got to tell you, public health, this is like my fourth different industry, if you will, I've been in. This is never more evident in public health. You have to convey what you're trying to, your organization's trying to support. They're your biggest brand ambassadors. That's kind of a word I use a lot. Different ways of evaluating people. Personality, certainly just mentioned, but it could be you might want people that have education in a certain area, certain experience levels. There are people that are great folks to work with but that don't understand big picture and strategic. You may want people in your organization that understand what your organization is trying to do, the mission or the vision of your organization. I mean, there's different ways to sort of slice this, but take a good look at the kind of people you want working with you in your organization. So packaging, okay, the obvious example of packaging in a more traditional sense is the box that something comes in, or any of you who get anything in technology nowadays know that stuff comes in that shrink wrap plastic that you need a chainsaw to open up, right? That's packaging, okay? That's packaging in a traditional sense. It's also used to convey messaging, too. Like, you'll always have a promotional message on there. There'll be the identity I was mentioning before, the logo, this and that. There's also an opportunity to cross-promote. Shrek comes to mind. Anything, there's Shreks on everything nowadays. You know, that's an example of using traditional packaging to market something or market something with a partner. But packaging more in today's sense, and a lot of when marketers, especially us, even a health marketing perspective, talk about, packaging is more the integration of a lot of different products and offerings. So a hotel could be a really good example. When you go to the hotel, the product is not just the room. It might be all the different services. It could be the concierge services. It could be the free little 1.5-ounce shampoos in your bathtub. That can be considered packaging. You know, the hotel is providing a package of different products to basically create a value for you. So I would say with your organization, are there things that you could offer out there that maybe you offer, maybe you can think of four or five different really nice things that you all offer to your members, but you do it very separately. Maybe there's a way to combine them. Maybe there's a way to integrate them, package them together. I didn't use the Microsoft example again, but I think when you buy a PC from Dell or anywhere, that's a great example. I mean, those are all different products that are packaged together. Microsoft doesn't make all those things on there. You know, a hardware company, you might buy a Dell computer, but it has a Microsoft operating system. It has Adobe for their PDF and for their creative software. I mean, that's an example of packaging. So partners, I think, you know, partners are huge in public health. I think people that I've seen in my year and a half, my very short existence on Earth in public health, is that people really rely on their partners. And I think I've seen people use their partners very well, not abuse, but use. And I think there's also an opportunity to be more strategic with that. I mean, are there things that partners do very well? Are there things that you do very well, but you don't do what they do very well, and vice versa? Is there an ability to have a marketing relationship? You know, could there be things that another partner offers? It could be another state association. I mean, I don't know. Again, I'm going to profess, I don't know your organization as well as you do. But there could be opportunities out there to work with partners to get product out there. So when I say partners, I'm really thinking about it in a marketing sense, a relationship sense, you know, working towards. And to be a partner, you have to have the same common objectives. You know, I think that's probably an understatement, but it happens a lot in marketing. People just try to get together and they want to put their names together because two names are better than one and there's two big names. But if you don't actually go and do anything, it's not really a partnership or marketing partnership. And there's different levels of partners too. There's business and development partners. So this is my last two slides, and I've now droned on. Thank you all for not having as many questions. But these are the last two phases. I've only devoted one slide to each, but they're as important and to support customer-centered marketing strategy. The first bullet, that could be almost a tagline. Bad implementations can ruin good strategy. You could have some of the best strategists in the world, people that have great ideas. You could write it down on paper, write your marketing plan, do your market segmentation, have a whiz-bang positioning statement, and then you're left with, okay, how do we do it? Oh, well, I'll do it in my spare time, you know, I'll pursue that. I got my regular job to do, you know. A lot of organizations fail miserably at this. There are a lot of good, I think anybody who ever lived through, like, .com, and we're all there for .com, but I don't think anybody worked in .com or knew someone who did. A lot of those companies failed not because they just didn't have the money, but they had great ideas, but they had no way, could not figure out how to actually implement it, how to get it out there. So if you're not even going to pay any attention to this piece, then don't even start the other pieces I was talking about. And, you know, you've hopefully spent a good hour here learning about something you'll never use. But you got to really be focused on this implementation aspect. You got to have, after you know what you want to do, how do you go do it? Put the action steps down. Practice good project management. You know, everything you do probably has a cost associated with it, both in price. You should have an owner. Should have accountability. Should be time-based. Some of you who have done objective development before probably know the SMART acronym. You know, it's got to be measurable, it's got to be achievable, realistic, specific, yes, time-based. I mean, there's different ways, but you got to be really succinct about how you want to go about implementing these. And then control. And control is kind of a funny word because marketing controls. I mean, they want to just take over everything. I've heard that before. Control is basically evaluation and correction. So it's going out there and doing an evaluation like anyone in marketing and public health should do. But it's also not just, even if you learn about what you've done wrong or what you could do better, if you don't take corrective action to fix that, then are you really achieving what you want to achieve? So, you know, this piece, again, I could probably spend a whole presentation on, but you know, here are some of just the ideas, and it's pretty typical evaluation stuff. You know, get your baseline out there. What are you doing today? Let's start from where you are now. What are you doing today? You know, what do you do well? What don't you do well? What would you like to see happen? Get that strategy. Get that good implementation going. Come back and revisit it based on whatever you think is appropriate, once a quarter or every 6 months or once a year. How does that, you know, relate to what you've captured? And once you find out what you can do better, make the correction and adjust accordingly. In that second to last bullet, a lot of readjustments don't always happen just with strategy, but it happens with just the amount of money you have. Sometimes you're forced to cut back because, you know, funding decreases or becomes non-existent. People move, transfer. I mean, things are always moving inside an organization. So generally, when there's something that happens inside an organization, it'll probably affect in some way, shape, or form your marketing sort of activities and programs. And that's it. So I'll take questions, and there's my email address and phone number, by the way, as well. From a public health perspective, I have no idea where to start, but I can tell you that in a private sector business, my career is mostly in a mid-sized market area. We always try to aim between 3% and 4% of revenues. Now, obviously, in public health, that's harder to do. You know, you're not in the business to make money, I don't think. You're in the business to get funding, but maybe that's a way of looking at it. Maybe based on all the funding goals you have, maybe you want to dedicate a certain percentage of your funding. But there isn't really, I haven't seen public health anyway, a way to go. But that's kind of generally what an industry has been at. But you'll see that also. You'll see companies that are just getting going that really want to make a huge push in the marketing. They may go up to about 9 or 10% of their revenues. But you also may see companies that don't want to spend a lot of time on it, and they might
dedicate a percentage to marketing. Other questions? Yes. Yeah, there's, let me preface this by saying our center is really focused on more the health program side of it too. So we're not in the business of marketing CDC or dealing with the workforce particularly, because we have a group that actually at CDC that manages the workforce aspect. But we are also very aware of public health worker potential shortages, ability to recruit students. I know I had a conversation with ASPH last year that, you know, there was some discussion about how do we do a better job of recruiting and getting people aware of what public health is. I mean, there certainly could be an effort to doing that. I can't speak particularly if we're doing anything to help that. I know we're really, from a health marketing and communications perspective, we're definitely working at trying to figure out ways to build that capacity up. But from a more general public health perspective, I unfortunately can't give you a real straight answer or direct answer, but it's worth for me to pursue and find out. Question there.
In our state, for a number of years, many of the local counties supported their staff and local health departments being part of the public health association, statewide public health association. But as the economy changed, they stopped funding the memberships of the staff.
Mm-hmm.
So our numbers dropped drastically. So what we've been trying to figure out is ways to attract those folks back. But at this point, they have to pay that membership out of their own pockets. We're looking for strategies to do that. Any ideas, suggestions you might want to make for us?
Well, I think it's a pretty tough situation because they went from paying nothing to having to pay something. So you could even significantly reduce what your membership fee would cost, and you could charge $50 or whatever, I don't know, and it's still, that's still more than zero. I really think in that particular case, you really have to look at what value, I'm kind of going back to some of the same, but you really have to look at the value piece of it. You don't want to get into making it all about cost. You don't want to say, well, we'll give you a free membership for 1 year, and then you can, it's my own personal professional opinion, but if you want to get people in the door, a lot of companies use tactics of, you know, first year free, then after that you can pay whatever, and you have to lock yourself into something or a contract. You probably don't want to go down that route with your member community. I think it's probably better to go out and saying, listen, there's a price for this membership, but here's the value associated with that. And you'll have to be very clear on what they're getting. And when I say very clear, is don't have to give them necessarily every single thing that they might get from that membership, but focus on the key things, 3 to 5 key things. Here's what X number of dollars will get you. You could also take the approach, you don't want to do this in a direct way, I mean, but you could build into your sort of literature, your communications that, you know, basically what you just said, as you know, fees used to be covered, we don't get the funding anymore. You don't want to just come out and say that, and that's probably in bad form, but there are probably ways when you're building in your kind of communications that you can subtly say, listen, you know, this is a service that has a value, it has a price, it was covered, it's not covered anymore, here's what you get for that price. Yeah, so you had a question up front, sorry, I'm trying to do priority.
No, the other thing, not only marketing to the workforce, but marketing public health to the public, because that's a real failure, but it's not been a real success, because people still don't know what public health is. And, you know, that's a big need, because we're trying to build support for public health in general.
I completely agree with that, and that actually allows me to plug something that we're doing at the center. I actually am very... No, that's good. I know. I have all my NCHM folks here. I was waiting for them to... No, we actually had a very, very small project. I mean, small, like, you know, very little funding to do this. We actually went out and talked to people about what public health meant to them. We actually explored the brand of public health, qualitative, again, but trying to get some of that feeling, trying to get a starter conversation going inside, not only our agency, but with our partners. We've had discussions with people like ASTO and NACHO and ASPH. It's not just a CDC thing, but the public health brand, as we call it, or as I call it, doesn't, like you just said, does not have that recognition out there that it needs to have. And It's funny because we've talked to public health professionals as well, and everyone will say that we need to do a better job of marketing public health. Everyone will say that we do too much insider jargon and we speak too much to the outside public in terms that we all understand as public health professionals. But then when you ask someone to change the way they speak and how they communicate, no one's willing to do it. And a lot of it's because, and we found this in the focus groups or the discussion groups, was they don't know how. How do we articulate what we do? You know, how it's a lot of public health is a very broad, expansive thing. So I think this is a multi-year, into the next decade kind of work that we have to do. And I'm not trying to make a sounding board, but just based on some of the stuff we found out with our really small discussion project is that there's a lot of confusion out there, and public health means different things to a lot of different people, depending where you are. So. Yeah, I mean, that's a start in the right direction. You know, I think we have to test that because, again, everyone every day doesn't necessarily practice good segment marketing. I mean, what we found in some of those discussion groups is we oversampled and we talked to a lot of Hispanics in Chicago, for example, and they thought public health was their public community hospital where they went and got their family planning information. But then also we went to Boston where, you know, we had taxi drivers that had master's degrees, and everyone there was a little more educated in terms of the group we brought in. And everyone knew what public health was, and all they would talk about was prevention. So, as an example, I think things like that are a great starting point, but we really have to start looking at how we just can't communicate, again, it's more of a professional opinion, but we can't just communicate to people in the same language. We're going to have to really work at getting more particular. Those are great comments. And I think that's not uncommon, or not just specific to public health, too. I mean, you'll see a lot of businesses who do business with their competitors because they have to. But it sounds like there's a lot of discussion that needs to happen. I mean, it's not just about maybe your organization stepping back, but all the other collective organizations or the Committee on Affiliates as a whole stepping back and maybe taking a particular focus. These kind of issues. There's a comment question back there. Thank you. to answer your question on the research side, I don't know in terms of your field. What? Yeah. Well, I think, you know, to do it in the right way, you probably need to go out and have these discussions with people and understand, you know, what these prospective membership communities are looking for. I think it's a strategy. I mean, I guess how well, if I'm understanding your comment right, I mean, it depends. When you look at partners, you have to you have to make a decision on how closely you want to work with partners or how separate you want to be. So, you know, it kind of comes back to differentiation. You got to really hone in on those things that you do differently and then translate that into a way that's in communications that say, no, we are this, and this is what we represent, and this is how we're different. And you can even go as far to be explicit in saying, we are different than these organizations for these following reasons. It sounds like, I kind of suspected this already, it sounds like that there hasn't been a lot of discussion on marketing to members at the state level. And, you know, I honestly don't even know how the organization is structured as well as I probably need to know, especially after this presentation, but, you know, maybe worth putting together a subcommittee or some sort to start discussing these issues. Because I bet you all have a lot of great ideas and you've done some things very well that other states and territories don't do well and vice versa. I bet there's a lot of collective sharing that's cheap, affordable, probably free other than your phone call, maybe your time, to share some of those ideas. Sit down, look at what you have. Okay, figure out, you know, based on maybe the framework that I've shown you here, what do we know? Okay, now what do we need to know? And go out there and get that information. And I know, you know, again, funding is always an issue, but if there's a few dollars floating around, you know, you may be able to find ways to get that information. Again, in an affordable way. Again, not quantitative, always seems to be a little bit more expensive than qualitative, but that's all you really need. You need to get some directional data, some directional information, to get a feeling for how people perceive you, how people perceive public health maybe compared to other health-related sectors. But I have not seen anything in my year and a half, and I worked in healthcare information before this for 6 years, I never came across any data that pointed out people's perceptions and differences of public health versus, say, healthcare delivery. So I think we're kind of unfortunately at a common denominator of zero or 0.5 or something. We really have to work on getting that knowledge base. So there's a comment. Do you still have a comment? Or?
Well, it was more of a comment, picking up on a couple of things already said. You know, one of the challenges, again, is selling public health are those letting people know how public health affects the everyday life, which is why the everywhere, which is similar to North Carolina's state. And what we're finding in North Carolina, and going back to the partnerships, is that many of the hospitals are now picking up on public health initiatives and actually doing public health work. The public health department shifting child health care services, which are prevention services, to the hospitals. Yet when they go to the hospital, they're no longer public health. They're now hospital stuff. And I don't think we've done a very good job in saying that this is still public health. A classic one is inspections of restaurants. Mm-hmm. Everybody can go to the best restaurant in town or the worst. And there's a big letter up there, A, B, C, D, R, don't eat here unless you're going to die. You know? But the way that happens is public health. Mm-hmm. Now, everybody can identify with restaurant inspections, but they don't tie it into a public health initiative. So this is where we have failed as a profession, is to say, well, this is a public health initiative and make those kinds of statements.
Let me ask you a question. Are you failing, to use your words, with other members of the healthcare community, meaning healthcare in general, payers, healthcare delivery, or are we talking about the American public or the public?
Both of those are true, but in my particular example, I'm thinking about the fact that in our state that is happening so much with the partnerships with the hospitals, mm-hmm. yet we have not kind of capitalized on somehow using the words public health when we talk about those initiatives. So if we're able to get hospitals involved in being considered a place where public health occurs, which of course it does, mm-hmm. then it makes us much more viable. Mm-hmm. And it validates our existence.
You're already starting a segmentation process, in a way. I mean, that's a market right there that you probably should be working with is your healthcare, the hospital side, or healthcare delivery, whatever label you do. They all are going to have different needs and wants. And here's another strategy from positioning. If you start to work with people, like say healthcare, so you might have a hospital, or you might have a better hospital system in a particular county that starts to encroach on public health duties and maybe think they can do it better. That's when you have to take a leadership position and do it very quickly. need to go out there and say, you know, us as a state organization or affiliate, this is who we are, why we do what we do, and why we're better suited for this, and take a leadership position. And instead of having those hospitals be maybe your competitors, all of a sudden they become members. That's an idea in terms of if you have someone who you think is going to encroach on what you do, you got to come back hard. And I mean hard but do it aggressively and market yourself and why you're different. So, but that's a segment right there. I mean, that's probably the whole, it goes back to some keynotes yesterday. I mean, healthcare in general, you know, whatever model you believe in with healthcare, we all need to work a little bit closer together, and everyone should be really market segments of each other and how we work with each other. You have that awareness, though. That's good. I mean, that's good information to have, and you can develop your strategy on that. You know, others might not be at that point yet, you know, but that's good information that you all should be sharing with each other in some mechanism. I mean, probably have to figure that out, but having that knowledge is great. I would also say, too, that if you're organizing your organization based on, like, profession or whatever, make sure that any decision you make, how you organize, make sure that it's outward-facing. Make sure you're structuring yourself based on what your members want. I didn't really mention this in the presentation, but it made me think, don't necessarily organize based on what's efficient and easy for you. Because a lot of times, what's easy and efficient for you might be confusing to your potential members and prospect. That just kind of made me think of that. I'm not saying you're doing that, but it just kind of made me think of that comment. That's another hand as well. Yeah. Not in our center. I'm going to look at my other center colleagues. I don't think it's in our center, but I have to do some digging on that. Could I actually ask a favor of you? I'd love to help you out with that question. My email or my phone number, can you send me an email and give me just a quick reminder email on that or overview? Yeah. I'm sorry, I don't know. It's kind of like, CDC is kind of like the university question when you go to a school with 30,000 people. Do you know so-and-so? Sorry. But I do want to help you out with that question, so please send me something as a reminder, and I'll file that up. Great. Tony Moulton.
APHA is getting on the affiliate technical assistance.
thank you. And our center and myself and Jay are certainly welcome to work with you all or work with APHA if they had an initiative going as well, too. I mean, it's good to hear that they actually are providing some assistance in that area for you. What they do with these, because I know this was being a recorded session, but definitely if you want to send me an email, I'd be happy to send you the presentation. I try to be as responsive as I can on email. I will warn you that if you don't hear back in the same day, don't take offense. I still love you all. I'm sorry? It's probably just easier for you all to email me. That's probably the best way of doing it. Yeah. It's one less piece of paper I have to be accountable for. Are we up for time? We got any more questions, or are we okay? I guess we got 5 minutes left. Yeah.
Taking a step away from the affiliate marketing, I work for a national nonprofit, and I have a public health background, but also a marketing background.
Great.
In an agency that
you're a rare breed, by the way. But
sorry.
You're a rare breed, by the way. That's a great question, and that's like climbing a mountain, I guess. I mean, there's not like a handbook, I guess, that I'm aware of that tells you how to do that. I think a lot of it is, first and foremost, buying into the culture of it. And I'm going to probably just express some things. We've seen it in our center. I keep looking at my center folks because we've come across that as well inside our own center, even people who have come from different centers who were communications people, or educators, and they didn't know anything about marketing, and they still couldn't understand what marketing was, or they didn't believe in it, yet they were inside of the Center for Health Marketing. I think a lot of it is cultural. I think a lot of it is just pure evangelism, going out there, and every opportunity you have to speak about why marketing is a good thing and why it belongs in public health, kind of like almost like your own mini grassroots campaign. I mean, you can do something like this, a presentation with your people, and try to say, this is why we're doing this. I think in the end, you have to show them the benefit of why they need to kind of adopt this mindset. But in my experience, I've always seen that you can do presentations like this, and you can put policies out there that say you must do something this way. But I think more success, that's helpful, and you probably need to do it. But I've always found that there's more success in just the socialization aspect of it, getting people to buy in. The downside of that is it takes time. But the upside is once you get people believing in it, they usually won't change their minds. That's the thing, yeah. And I'll tell you, that just even gets outside of a marketing thing more than just a behavioral thing. I mean, that's just anybody in business who's been involved in an organization that, say, restructures. We've had the same thing with the city agency. I mean, we've restructured quite a bit, and people, you know, have some adapt very easy and some don't. It's probably good, you know, to do that socialization. If you have people that you know in your contact list or people in your local area that you might have a company that does really well with marketing or branding, bringing someone from the outside helps a lot. Someone probably pro bono, you know, someone who can do it for free. But sometimes I have found, again, I'm going more on experiences than anything. It's nothing I've read in a textbook or journal, but it's kind of like, I guess maybe a good analogy is when you're kids and your parents talk about things and they want you to do something, you kind of drown them out after a while, but then someone else from the outside of the family says the same thing. That's kind of where I'm going with this. Maybe bring someone from the outside to kind of demonstrate why they practice good marketing and what it does for them. You know, that might help. I think the biggest success of all, but it's probably the end point, is start showing some demonstrated results, like what marketing got you. Okay, we took a particular activity or program and we did a very customer marketing approach type of thing, but you got to show that deliverable. Because if you don't see the success to it, people may not buy into it. I empathize with you because I don't know of a quick fix to make that happen. Patience, and I think the first word I said is cultural. I think that's going to be your biggest thing. Get people to buy into it, the mindset of it. So I wish you good luck. Bye. Thank you, everybody. It's been very much a pleasure for me. Thank you very much.